Do you know a high school student who would make a great pastor, teacher, deaconess, director of parish music, or director of Christian education? Tell them about Careers for Christ Weekend, Friday, October 12th through Sunday, October 14th at Concordia University, Chicago. This even includes a group outing to downtown Chicago. Check it out at cuchicago.edu/c4c. That's cuchicago.edu/c4c.
I had a series of visions when I was younger. And after each one ended, the same thought would be stuck in my head.
What did you see?
I saw a nun. Word of my visions reached the church, and I was asked to accompany a priest to an abbey in Romania.
The abbey has a long history.
Valak.
Not all good.
What?
She knew him down. Kalian's here.
That is the trailer for the movie The Nun, a horror movie with strong religious themes. Does it get the details right? If you're going to talk about nuns and priests and abbeys and the Roman Catholic Church, it helps to get the details right. And is it scary since it's supposed to be a horror movie? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll review the movie The Nun with Pastor Ted Geese here in the first half hour of the program. Then we'll do part two of our series on the U.S. Constitution. Dr. Russell Don, director of the pre-law program at Concordia University, Irvine, California, will join us to talk about the origins and the context of the Constitution. Before there was the Constitution, there was another constituting document. It was called the Articles of Confederation. Why don't we still live under it? What was deficient about it? Was it simply a stopgap measure? Then we'll begin a series on the law accuses always apart from Christ. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. He's author of the new book, Reading Isaiah with Luther. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And our listener comment line open 24/7, especially for our beloved on-demand listeners, 618-223-8382. Joining us to review the movie The Nun, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
You say that this movie almost defies criticism. Why is that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that. One reason is that it focuses in on some ideas that if they're not believed, then even to talk about them seems kind of ridiculous. The other thing is that the movie itself, the director, the people who made the movie, don't seem to have taken those ideas very seriously themselves. So again, it kind of becomes a thing where, you know, how do you fault them for something that they didn't even take seriously in the first place? So I guess a good analogy would be like this. If people have been to like Disneyland or to a fair or something like that, and there's like a ride or something, the ride maybe sometimes doesn't change at all from year to year to year. But they've just taken the ride and they've changed all of the outside things on the ride. So, okay, so now Toy Story 3 is really popular. So we're going to make it Toy Story 3 themed. And then a couple years later, now it's a Marvel superhero thing. So now we're going to make it Iron Man themed. But the ride itself didn't change. So in a way, that's kind of the sort of thing that seems to be going on here. They didn't take, they've got a ride and they've got this kind of religious shellac over the whole thing. It didn't seem like their heart was completely in it.
You say it's a paint by numbers story. Is that an extension of that first idea?
Yeah, that's basically what I'm saying. It's like there's no real surprises here. There's no real twists that work. It's just basically a run of the mill kind of story that you're watching in the theater. So you're not going to be surprised by anything. There's jump scares, but you know, you walk up behind anybody and slam a book shut and they'll make them jump. It doesn't require sitting in a theater watching a scary movie.
Now, this is part of a rather loose franchise, I take it.
Yeah, this is kind of like, you know, they talk about cinematic universes now. So we've talked a lot about Marvel, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. DC Comics also has a cinematic universe that's not faring as well. But this one is like the Conjuring cinematic universe. And actually, we've talked about one of these movies every year since 2013. So there was The Conjuring 2, Annabelle Creation. And now there's this movie, The Nun, also. So, and apparently I heard that it was announced that the Crooked Man, which was a character that was introduced in The Conjuring 2, is now going to have its own spinoff. So there's just going to be more of these, pretty much one a year, probably for until they stop making money.
Okay. Take us through the plot. Is it a prequel, a sequel? Where does it fit into the Conjuring storyline or universe?
Okay, so The Conjuring 2 had kind of a vignette that was included in the film where there was this painting of a creepy nun, and it was in the basement of the Warren's house. That introduced the character of the nun. So then what you have here is, this is in 1952, so this is a prequel to everything, and what you have is this priest and a novice nun who hasn't taken her vows yet, played by Teresa Farmiga, who is the real-life sister of the lady who played Lorraine Warren in the other Vera Farmiga, who played the Lorraine Warren in the other movies. These two are sent by the Vatican to this remote area of Romania, to this abbey where this nun has committed suicide, to investigate. And when they arrive, there's this French-Canadian guy who's called Frenchie, who's supposed to be sort of comic relief, but is not that funny. He's got a couple moments, but not really that much. He takes them. He's their coach rider. He takes them to the abbey, which is inside a old castle. And then really the three of them have to find out the mysteries of the abbey, what's going on. Turns out there's this ghost of this nun. And then when they discover that it's really some kind of demon, then they have to like risk their lives to make it stay there because, you know, they don't want the evil to get out. Essentially, that's, in a nutshell, that's the bare bones.
So all horror movies are a series of tropes. It's just the way it is. I think it's the genre in which it is most difficult to do something original. And recently, we reviewed A Quiet Place.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which most people said, now there you go. That's an original idea, an original way of approaching the horror genre, and many people believe that was very successful. You compare and contrast this to some of the kind of classics where we get the jump scares, where we get these common themes that run through, these vignettes that run through horror movies. Do that for us, if you would.
There are horror films or psychological dramas that verge on horror that come out at different times and will really grasp people's imaginations. So, for instance, I mentioned that like a movie like Psycho by Alfred Hitchcock, that movie, in the end, people who saw that film were kind of like even uneasy at home by themselves having a shower. Or Jaws from 1975 by Spielberg, that one made people uneasy about getting into the water at the beach. So sometimes these things kind of really have a, you know, kind of a zeitgeist kind of a thing, or they really penetrate the mind of the viewers. And that's when horror films work best, is when people have left the theater, the lights have come up, they've gone home, they're getting ready to go to bed, they're about to turn out the lights, and then as soon as the lights go out, they're still thinking about it, that there's some kind of feeling of dread, even momentary. That's when the if the film can have a hook where it gets right into the life of the person, that's where it's most successful. So with a film like this, you get you know, it's set in Romania, so it's kind of like the Transylvania area, you know, you've got this big abbey. So then maybe you start to think of Dracula, like Bram Stoker's Dracula. But the thing about Bram Stoker's Dracula, based on the book, a film by Francis Ford Coppola, or even the original novel, eventually it gets away from Transylvania back into a world that's more familiar to the viewer. And then you have your hooks to get you thinking about things. But this whole film is kind of stuck in this castle, in this abbey, and it doesn't really, it's not a familiar setting. They don't really utilize it in a really memorable way. And if you think back to that first Conjuring movie, you don't really need a lot sometimes to get a good scare out of people. There was a scene in that movie where it's just a dark corner, and then there's a ball that gets thrown out of the corner, and the whole audience jumped in a way that didn't happen in this film. There were a couple moments where people were, you know, enjoying it, you know, for being a horror film, the kind of ride that those things can be. But overall, it's like a tank running out of gas.
I've been a fan of horror films less and less as I grow older, but I've never been, up until recently, a fan of any kind of horror fiction. But I've been reading through the considerable corpus of Stephen King for the first time in my life. I'd never read a single Stephen King novel, but now I'm on my probably dozenth, if I'm not mistaken, working through this 44 hours of The Stand, which is his opus magnum.
Yeah.
And in reading through this stuff that has formed the scripts for so many horror films, especially when we recently reviewed It, you see the origins of a lot of these things where we're seeing it for the very, very first time. Are you simply saying that this film, in addition to being kind of weak in the way it delivers its punch, is completely unoriginal?
Pretty unoriginal. It didn't really have anything that was new in any kind of way. And then the other thing about it is that the way that it went about it, like, if you're not going to have something new, then you'd better come about telling the story in a different kind of way. And it didn't really do that either. So that's another kind of problem that it has too.
Did it take the setting or the premise, which is really deep inside the bowels of Roman Catholicism, you don't get any more deep than abbeys and convents and things like that. Did it take that seriously? Did it appear to have an accurate working knowledge of Roman Catholicism?
No, this is a very much like a veneer. Like, occasionally they talk about things like perpetual adoration, you know, and they have like a nun that's praying constantly. But a Christian with a working knowledge of Roman Catholicism will be able to piece some of this stuff together. And maybe they're expecting you to fill in the blanks, but they never bother to. And they don't even do it in a simple way. There's just holes there. So if you have perpetual adoration, what is it perpetual adoration of? So essentially that's going to be the host. So like they'll have like a, you know, the host there so that, you know, they can like have perpetual adoration of it, but they don't really include that kind of, the actual object of the adoration is not included in that way for that kind of portion of the film. They talk about vows. They gloss over that kind of stuff. So at one point the novice ends up taking her vows because that's important. And now she's a full-fledged nun to go up against the bad nun, the demon nun. So, but they kind of just gloss over that as well. So they don't really, it's all more of a veneer. It's not really the thing. It's like I was talking about, it's the shrink wrap around the thing, but it's not the thing itself.
When we come back from this break, we will continue our review of the movie The Nun. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We'll talk about the breaking of religious taboos in the film. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Let's examine the response of our Christian community to the cultural turmoil regarding sexuality and children.
Licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Beverly Yonke talking about her presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
In 50 years, we've spiked to what is now a cultural crisis from what was a nearly non-existent issue. We can wring our hands, remain unacquainted with the facts, or simply remain silent and avoid the unpleasantries. Biblical sexuality and God's created order aren't polling well these days, while media talking heads gush about the joys and justice of violating natural law.
You can meet and hear Dr. Beverly Yonke making the case for a Christian response to the transgender child at Issues Etc.'s Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie The Nun. Pastor Geese taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, let's talk about in this film, but it also is a general theme in a lot of horror films that deal with the church, the overturning of religious symbols, the breaking of religious taboos.
Yeah, I mean, one film that really famously did this in a way that unnerved many, many viewers was The Exorcist from 1973. That's William Friedkin's film. And at the time, there was maybe a stronger social contract that spanned both Roman Catholic and Protestant and Lutheran world in North America, where certain things were more sacrosanct. And when you took those, you know, religious imagery or items and you defiled them on camera, it caused a distress and unease and fear and horror in the people viewing it. But, you know, as you know, and on Issues Etc., you guys have talked a lot about over the years about the rise of the nuns, not nuns in habits, but the non-affiliated individuals in society. You know, as that portion of society grows, there's probably less connection to these kind of religious items in a pious way. They may have less regard for them in general. So then if you see a crucifix flip upside down on a wall and burst into flames, it's not going to really mean as much to you as a viewer, let's say. Now, watching the film as a Christian, you know, there are a couple uneasy like things that you see in it. There's a large crucifix with a head. The head of Christ is just absent from it. You know, they linger on that a little bit here and there. And that's kind of an uneasy thing. But for viewers that don't really have any sort of feelings towards or thoughts about crucifix or what it represents, Christ crucified, then, you know, how effective will the breaking of a taboo, you know, in not treating these things as holy end up being? It's a question of like, how long do these kind of particular tropes continue to do their work for the general population? Like when The Exorcist came out, that was a big hit because it got so deep under people's skin.
What do you think it is about, I won't say Roman Catholicism, but the kind of the general caricature of Roman Catholicism that exists in the United States? Why do you think that is often fodder for horror movies?
You know, I wonder if you would even have the kind of things that we've had in film, like going through the 70s and 80s and 90s and into the aughts and now, if you hadn't had Vatican II. Because in Vatican II, of course, they were all permitted to put away their the various different kinds of habits and stuff that you, and the religious dress of the monks, and you could tell a Dominican from a Franciscan, from a Jesuit, from a Cistercian by what they were wearing. And when they all kind of went to more plain clothes kind of uniforms, as it were, it kind of took all of those items, that kind of style of clothing, and made it not common, but uncommon. So then I think that maybe like film and television kind of like grabbed hold of that and started using it more because it was visually more interesting, but also because it was an uncommon thing. It was an old thing, and old things are scary. I wonder if you would, if all of that stuff was as common as it had been prior to Vatican II, I wonder if you would have it being used in the way that it's been used in the last number of decades. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think I was approaching it. I'm fascinated by your idea there that we have kind of old Catholicism and new Catholicism, and that forms the impetus for some of this. But I was wondering whether or not the angle of superstition maybe might play into it, because often what the church is doing in a horror movie, the characters that are religious, mm-hmm. is they are employing Christianity, not things like prayer, but using talismans that are borrowed from Christianity in order to fight the devil or send a demon back to hell. I think you even say it occurs in this film, too.
Yeah. I mean, in this film particularly, there is an item that shows up, and it's kind of like the way that it's shown to you. It's this kind of a crystal kind of object that's kind of, it looks like it's a half, you know, like the slipper from Sleeping Beauty. Or Cinderella rather, or, you know, the holy hand grenade from Monty Python's Holy Grail. And in it, it has like blood taken from, or this is the way the movie presents it, blood collected at the crucifixion. And this holy relic is going to be used to stop the demonic nun. Now, Lutherans and Protestants in general don't really ascribe authenticity to these kinds of relics. And even if they had been authentic in some way, so if you can set aside like the blood of Christ for a second and just say, you know, it's like the femur of, you know, Saint Peter or something like that, what good would it do you to have it? Like, is it going to have any kind of special efficacious effect? And, you know, Lutherans and, you know, Protestants are going to say, no, it's not. Because it's really word and sacrament, God's word. That's where that's going to be the actual power that, you know, is conveyed through God to people in circumstances like, again, like these, you know, I'm using air quotes because, you know, this is so far-fetched. But so then you start getting into the more superstitious end of Roman Catholicism through history. And Luther wrote about this. We find this in the Confessions. You don't put your trust and faith and hope in these things. You put it in Christ. So, you know, there is this kind of layer of superstition that is associated with all of this stuff. And it's the part of Roman Catholicism that always shines in these movies. And it is, you know, it is literally part of what they have. They have some superstitious ideas when it comes to relics. And that comes into the forefront in this film as well.
Finally, you went to see this with several parishioners of yours. Did anyone, yes. Was anyone scared by it?
No. There were a couple moments where people were kind of little squeamish or whatever. And, you know, there was one little spot where, you know, you could tell that people were sort of getting into it a little bit near the end of the film. But No, nobody was scared, and nobody left, you know, worried about anything at all afterwards either.
Can we say, kind of by way of summary, that maybe the franchise, as loose as it is at the point of squeezing the turnip to get a little more blood out of it?
Yeah, you know what? This seems to be the thing that they do. The first Conjuring movie was by James Wan, and he's quite good. So it's a very tight, good roller coaster ride. The second Conjuring movie is also by James Wan. Again, quite good. All of these side peripheral ones, like the satellites that are floating around it in this, you know, universe that they're creating, cinematic universe, they're all by first-time directors or novice directors. They're all kind of getting a shot at getting into the horror genre, and they're generally not as good. So when they finally get around to making The Conjuring 3, if James Wan doesn't come back to do it, and he doesn't provide that same sort of really tight roller coaster ride, then you can pretty much say that this is going to trail out of, you know, it's running completely out of steam if he doesn't come back. But the thing to remember is that it's always a good investment often for these horror films. It cost $22 million to make the movie, and then it made $86 million in its first, 2 weeks. So they got their money back, and basically the rule of thumb is whatever the production cost is, you double it, and that covers all of your advertising, and then everything past that is all just gravy. So this is all, you know, they're making piles of money on this, which means the scariest thing about The Nun might be an announcement of a sequel.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. You can read his review of The Nun at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break, Dr. Russell Dawn will join us. We're going to continue a series on the U.S. Constitution. Today, we'll be talking about the origins and the context of the Constitution, talking at some length about the document that predated the Constitution, the Articles of the Confederation.
You can't do it all. You're just not strong enough, smart enough, organized enough, driven enough. You're not enough, and you hate it. If this sounds like your life, check out the September edition of The Lutheran Witness. Join Jonathan Fisk, Brian Katchelmeyer, and others as you learn to think more deeply about time and your own human limitations. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
Holy Cross Evangelical Lutheran Church, Albany, Oregon, is a mid-Willamette Valley LCMS congregation where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one, with sound biblical doctrine, weekly communion, and a clear confession of Christ crucified for the sin of the world. Please join us at 2515 Queen Avenue Southeast or visit our website at www.holycrosslutheranalbany.org.
Do you know a high school student who would make a great pastor, teacher, deaconess, director of parish music, or director of Christian education? Tell them about Careers for Christ Weekend, Friday, October 12th through Sunday, October 14th at Concordia University, Chicago. This even includes a group outing to downtown Chicago. Check it out at cuchicago.edu/c4c. That's cuchicago.edu/c4c. The number 4, C.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I'm delighted to be chairman of Preach the Word Project, a project of our synod to strengthen the preaching of all of us pastors in the synod. We know how eternally important that is.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Fekencher talking about the new Preach the Word Project.
So we've put together a program of 12 modules that will be coming out this year and over the next 3 years on a variety of preaching topics for pastors to do together with two other pastors, two guys they trust, two guys they feel comfortable with, written materials and very fine video quality materials that are now becoming available.
Preach the Word helps pastors work together to improve their preaching with several resources and by interacting with seminary professors and fellow preachers. Find out more at lcms.org/preachtheword. lcms.org/preachtheword. Preaching is challenging business. We all can use some fresh ideas. lcms.org/preachtheword.